We have four speakers today from EPA Region 7, Brad Van, Susan Klein, Stephanie Doolin, and Bob Richards. The speakers will remind you what slide number you are on to help you follow along with the presentation. Today's presentation will provide an overview of the specific changes for the FY09 EPA Brownfield Proposal Guidelines. It will discuss frequently asked questions and provide the current answers to those. And then it's also going to allow you all on the phone and those streaming audio to pose your own questions to the speakers about your specific proposals. We will ask that questions be held to the end of the presentation. If you are streaming the presentation online, please feel free to submit your questions as we go, and I will present them to the speakers on your behalf during the question and answer section. I believe Brad Van will open the presentation now.
Thanks, Nicole. Hi, everyone. I'm Brad Van. I'm with EPA Region 7 Brownfield Program, and welcome to our second CLUIN session for this year's ARC Grants competition. And by the way, if you hear sort of a humming noise in the background, that's not distortion. We just have a projector on this end, and you may actually be able to hear it. I don't know. But so just ignore that. No technical difficulties so far. But at any rate, first we're going to start off this session just discussing, we're going to start looking at some reminders. Some folks that are on this call may have participated in our previous one. Others may not have participated at all. So we're going to start off going over just some details and highlight some reminders about the competition. And also look at, we're not going to look at every detail, but we're going to look at what's new and specifically highlight those for this year, and then afterwards, like Nicole said, then we'll open up to an open forum or question and answer session, and we have a number of folks here to assist us with that today. So again, some important dates. August 22nd, of course, the ARC request proposal went out. The submissions are due for an assessment, clean up a revolving loan fund proposal, or ARC grant, by November 14th. Of this year. Again, you'll want to submit a second hard copy proposal to your Brownfields coordinator also by that deadline. And we emphasize that because sometimes there may be some issue that may come up with a submittal to headquarters. It's rare, but it can happen. And by submitting that second copy to your regional Brownfields coordinator, we have proof that you did submit a presentation or a proposal in on time. And just some information, approximately there's $81.3 million available this year, and cooperative agreements that are ranked successfully will be awarded by September 30th of 2009. And this, bear in mind, for those that aren't familiar with the process, there are, of course, post-selection and pre-award requirements that will follow after if your proposal is successfully ranked. You will have to submit a formal grant application, including a standard federal form and work plan will need to be submitted and approved, and awards may take approximately 90 days from time of submission to the final application package. So again, we'll get a little more details on this in a few minutes. Next slide, please. Excuse me. All right, again, some more reminders here. Again, we're discussing the ARC grants, or the assessment, the revolving loan fund for cleanup, or the cleanup grants themselves, all commonly called as ARC. Again, there's just some reminder items here for you. The FY 2009 proposal guidelines are available at the EPA website or at the grants.gov website, which is provided. And there's some key things to remember to follow the guidelines and be sure to follow the correct set of guidelines. This year, our guidelines are segregated by grant type, whereas in the past, they all used to be in one single booklet. They are now in three separate booklets. So be sure if you're applying for an assessment grant that you have the assessment booklet, or vice versa if you're applying for a cleanup or revolving loan fund. Again, remember to read them thoroughly and be sure to follow all the requirements for your proposal submittal. For example, this year's responses to all ranking criteria must first cite the criteria number and title in their proposal. This is a subtle change from last year, but it's a significant one. So when you're writing your proposals, and especially if you're dusting off old proposals, there have been some significant changes in the FY09 year. and you want to make sure that you incorporate those into that proposal when you go to resubmit it. Also be sure to engage your state partners, and we will provide you with a list of those here at the end of the session. Next slide, please. Again, be sure to answer every criterion and as completely as possible. Even if it's not an applicable criterion, state that it's not applicable and just briefly say why. You know, just a sentence is fine. But don't leave anything blank. A blank is a zero, and gives the reviewers nothing to work on. Non-applicable tells us it's not applicable. And again, when you're writing your proposal, as always, remember the target community in all of your responses, and be sure to focus your answers on that accordingly, because that's what your story is supposed to be all about. Again, a new item this year also is there are checklists, and if you're in the assessment booklet, it's on page 29, and if you're in the cleanup guideline booklet, it's on page 31. And you want to be sure just to use those before you submit your proposal. Those were put in there to help applicants avoid some very common but costly errors that have occurred in the past. So when you get your proposal together and you know it's finished and you're ready to submit it, turn to section 5D and look down that proposal list and make sure you have all those items that you need. So that way you'll have a complete submittal package. Next slide, please. Again, some additional reminders here. We want to look at you want to make sure that you have a current letter from your state and tribal environmental authority. And this is the same as last year. There's no difference here. This is a threshold requirement that, in other words, when your proposal is sent in, there's certain things that it must have to pass or fail to go on for national ranking. And one of those is an accompanied letter from your state or tribal environmental authority. So be sure that you have that. And that letter specifically identifies the proposals or proposals for which you are submitting. If you're submitting multiple proposals, the state can write you one letter for all of them to save, of course, time and paper, but it must naturally mention all of your proposals, and you can then just photocopy it and place those copies in your individual proposal submit. Also remember, if you have a site-specific petroleum determination, coming in for one of your assessments or cleanups, you want to make sure that you have a state or tribal authority letter showing that determination has been done as a separate letter or a second letter. And again, that would be an attachment. These are attachments that would be added to the back. They do not count against your overall packet count. Next slide, please.
If you just joined us, we're on slide number 9.
Thank you. Okay, and slide number 9 is just a placeholder. We're going to kind of go into now what I talked about, what's new with the FY09 grant guidelines versus what was last year's. So, again, we'll move on to the next slide. Slide 10, please. The biggest and most significant changes that occurred within the assessment grant. There have been significant changes between last year and this year, and first I just want to state that what hasn't changed. EPA is still offering assessment grants to eligible entities to perform inventory, assess, characterize, and conduct cleanup planning with community involvement at brownfield sites. That is not different. These grants are still offered for community-wide or site-specific use at up to $200,000 per proposal, for either hazardous substance or petroleum contaminants. And again, hasn't changed. What is slightly different or unique this year is that eligible entities can now apply in the case of for community-wide applications. They can apply for $200,000 for either a hazardous substance or $200,000 for petroleum. You can put those in as separate proposals, similar to last year, if you're targeting areas that are discreetly different. In other words, if your petroleum sites are on the east side of town and your hazardous substances properties are on the west side of town, you can submit those as two separate proposals in your community-wide target. However, if your targets are identical, both the hazardous substance and petroleum properties, you can simply now submit one proposal for up to $200,000 or for up to $400,000. $200,000 again maximum for each constituent, the petroleum or the hazardous substance constituent. You just have to break those out within your budget and those respective areas within the proposal so that the reviewer understands this is the hazardous substance component, this is the petroleum component. But again, that just eliminates some paperwork. So those can be essentially bundled into one proposal. The other thing to look at that's certainly new is the assessment coalition. We've had coalitions in the past for revolving loan fund. That's not new. But it is new for assessment. And under the assessment coalitions, can apply, and coalitions have to be three or more eligible entities that will form a coalition and apply for up to $1 million in assessment funding, and they must address a minimum of 5 sites. Again, the intent is not to be site-specific here, but to address a community-wide application. Such coalitions certainly will allow your smaller and more rural communities that do not have the necessary resources an opportunity to partner with others and participate in a brownfield program, and you can certainly share your resources. All coalition applicants, however, cannot apply for other community-wide or site-specific assessment grants during the same competition year. So bear that in mind. If you're going to apply, you have other community-wide applications, you may not want to be part of a coalition. However, if you are, then that is the only assessment that you can apply for during this competition year. It doesn't prevent you in future competitions. And also, as part of a coalition, one of the members has to be the point of contact. They have to be the senior applicant to receive the grant and be responsible for managing that grant. So you'll want to make sure that you, if your proposal is successfully ranked and selected for award, you'll want to have to put together a memorandum of agreement that identifies how you're going to segregate the handling and the task associated with that proposal. Next slide, please. Okay, this is a graphic that we put together specifically to discuss this because we know it's a little confusing the first time out when you look at, well, is it one grant, is it two grants, how does this work? So essentially, if you just kind of look at the slide, in the upper left-hand corner, you can see that up to $400,000 for community-wide assessment. Again, just like before, you can apply for $200,000 for hazardous substances or $200,000 for petroleum, plus, staying on the left side, an eligible applicant could also apply for, in the same competition year, one site-specific assessment proposal for, again, up to $200,000 or up to $350,000 if there was a site waiver. Now, again, on the top, going across, you can see with the community-wide proposals, there's essentially two paths. One path, you have the same target area like I discussed, so you can submit a bundled proposal, and you just break your cost out accordingly between those two substances. Or, if you have different target areas, then you probably will want to submit two separate proposals, specifically identifying those. And again, you can have your hazardous substance in one, your petroleum in the other. That would be consistent with what's been done in the past. And again, that's just as a final reminder, if you're part of a million-dollar coalition, you're not going to have to worry about that this year because you're not going to be submitting these kind of proposals. But we just wanted to kind of provide this graphic for future reference if there's any confusion. Next slide, please. This would be slide number 12. This is a change. It was community notification. In the past, this has changed actually several times over the years. Community notification was originally required for all the grant types. Last year, it was a requirement that was post-selection but pre-award for all the grant types to perform. And this year, the change has been with regards to cleanup. This does not apply to the assessment or the revolving loan fund. So if you're applying for those, this isn't applicable. But if you are applying for a cleanup grant, you must have provided your, this is threshold, in other words, it's pass-fail. If the proposal comes in without this, it will not be sent on for ranking. But if you're coming in for a cleanup grant, you must have performed the community notification prior to submittal of your proposal. And it'll be required, certain information will be submitted with it, which I'll discuss here in a moment. Part of that means you have to host at least one meeting to address the public and provide them a meaningful opportunity to engage in the process. Now, if you're submitting multiple proposals, say you want to clean up several different sites, you can still have just one meeting to accommodate those, but you'll have to make sure that adequate notification and opportunity was sent to all target areas so they can be meaningfully engaged. All right, next slide, please. And this would be slide number 13. Again, you're going to want to place an ad or an equivalent in your local paper. Of course, it's got to cover those target areas. And the ad's going to want to include a number of things. But first, and most certainly, it has to clearly communicate that a copy of the grant proposal is available to the public and where it is so the public can find this, review it, and provide comment. It also must indicate that you will accept comments on the draft proposal, where and when, and provide a date and a location that the public meeting will be held. And on, if you're looking through the cleanup requirements for this year, the guidelines, it's on page 19 that discusses those items that must be attached to your proposal. And that's important to note. This year, if you're submitting a cleanup grant, you have to submit proof, essentially, that you did have this community notification opportunity. And on page 19 in your guideline booklet, it will specifically state that you have to attach a copy of the advertisement or an equivalent of that, a summary of your comments that were received, your responses or response to those comments, which is one comment, and then the meeting notes and sign-in sheet or sheets from the public meeting or meetings that you held. So again, those are attachments. They do not count against your page count in any way, shape, or form, but they will be attached with your cleanup proposals. Next page, please. Next slide, please. It'll be number 14. All right, again, we continue with the cleanup grant program, and this is the first item is not new. This was established last year, and I believe the year before. It's been the past 2 years. But again, it's a threshold requirement. It's not a threshold requirement, but it's a requirement that's post-selection. If you were ranked successfully and you were selected for a cleanup grant, you must own that property by June 30th of 2009. If you cannot obtain ownership through fee simple title, in other words, you own the property and nobody else does, then EPA will not go forward and award that grant. And again, that date was selected because that gives EPA adequate time to go back to others that were also ranked well, basically the next in line, that have been able to obtain ownership to award to them. So before the end of the fiscal year. So that's why that date is set. And that's a firm date. There's no budging on that. So be sure to make sure that your arrangements are in order for that property transaction. We understand... The date was set after the selection or the proposal selection competition specifically because some people don't want or some communities do not wish to take on these property until they know they have the grant available to do the cleanup. So that provides you adequate time to make that happen. Another requirement, and again this is threshold, is that the applicant must have completed a Phase 2 environmental site assessment prior to the proposal submittal, and this is threshold, of course, so it must have happened. And when we say that they must have completed a Phase 2 site assessment, that means that at least a draft report must be somewhere in some regulator's hands stating, you know, what the site issue is and why it needs, you know, what you would then be pursuing for cleanup. So that must have occurred. And that's it for that slide. Next slide, please. Oh, I'm sorry. Before you go forward, let me add one other thing. And this is specific to cleanup. In Section 6F are your programmatic requirements, and these are post-award requirements. But what I wanted to specifically have you pay attention to is that your post-award requirements should be understood thoroughly because these play very specific into your task, your budget, and your activities of your proposal, or it should, because when you're coming in for a cleanup, you're going to be holding community meetings. You're going to be compiling an administrative record. You're going to be developing your ABCA and whatnot. So these are requirements that you'll want to make sure that you address in your proposal somewhere. Next slide, please. Slide 15. All right, again, still on the cleanup slide, and this was put in specifically because there is an error this year in the proposal guideline, and so if you're submitting for a cleanup grant only, and basically it tells you what it should have read versus what it does read, but the error occurs in the threshold criteria on section 3C3, and it has to do with site eligibility and property ownership for a brownfields applicant. And the error actually in the guidelines is on page 12. But what it should have essentially said is that all applicants must respond to items A through E. The error says A through D. And if the site is a hazardous substance, it must then respond to F through H. And if it's a petroleum site, you would respond to sub-item I. And if this sounds incredibly jargon and confusing, just flip to the next slide. Slide number 16. This is just a graphic we put together to provide you with just essentially, you know, again, if you're coming in for a cleanup and you're going through the site eligibility and property ownership component, here's the applicable parts if you're coming in for a hazardous substance or if you're coming in for a petroleum grant. So that helps you understand which part's which. Again, the error in the slide and in the guidelines says the first part says A through D and it should be A through E, and the error just kind of rolls down to the next part. It says E through H and it should be F through H. So just want you to know that since it is threshold, it's rather important. Next slide. Slide number 17. And these are the ranking criteria this year. And again, and it's important to note this because if you're dusting off a proposal from last year and you're going to reuse this, the format is different. Many of the items that were discussed in last year's proposal or guideline requirements are in these requirements, but they are likely in some sort of different order. All right, and just for a note here, it's very quiet out there. I'd like to do a sound check. Nicole, can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're fine.
Good. All right. Everybody gets silent. I always have this worry. I'm just kind of talking to myself at some point. Thank you.
It happens often.
It does happen. All right. So we will continue since we have connection. Again, these ranking criteria are community need, project description and feasibility success, community engagement partnerships, project benefit. And again, these were organized in an attempt to allow you and your through your proposal to tell your story. So follow them correctly. And again, each grant type this year, unlike in the previous years, whether you're applying for assessment, cleanup, or revolving loan fund, the point distribution all adds up to 100. They don't add up exactly the same way to 100, but they all add up to 100. So that's rather helpful, certainly for our end, as opposed to having all these strange 112s and 132s that we had in the past. So bear that in mind. Next slide. All right, we are now on slide number 18, and we're looking at the ranking criteria. And this is an important one. This is what's specifically new this year, and it has to do with community engagement and partnerships. And you can see the section is provided there that it falls under. And really this has to do with your support letters. These are your partnerships that you're going to be discussing and describing. And when you identify those community-based organizations, and let's remember that community letters of support from community-based organizations should come from non-governmental grassroots community support letters. And they need to spell out the specific commitments to the project. They need to demonstrate the support letter needs to demonstrate the organization's knowledge of the project, how they relate to, they can relate to the organizational mission. They describe maybe their role in the project and how that's going to work, and also describe any commitment. So again, these are letters that are required, and again, these are attachments. They do not against your payment account. But again, these are things you want to make sure that are provided in those letters of support, not just that, oh yeah, we know so-and-so and they're great. So next slide, please. Slide number 19. And again, that's just a placeholder. We're going to move on to additional resources. And again, these resources are provided because if you do have follow-up questions, we have our folks available to answer these questions. Naturally, since this is a competition stage of the process, EPA personnel are limited what they can and can't respond to during the competition. We can respond to any threshold questions. We can respond to any general competition-related questions for clarification. We can't discuss your individual proposal. Next slide. However, that's why we discussed there are your state partners, and we want to make sure that you remember your state partners. You want to engage them early in the process. Your state partners are important because they can discuss your individual proposals with you. They're not tied by our competition restrictions. And also, you're going to be coming to them for your state letter or letters if you're coming in for a petroleum site. So it's important that you talk to them early and get those letters so that they're not rushing at the last minute to get those to you. And next slide, please. Slide number 22. These are some web-based resources that are available. And these are all EPA resources, and they provide both, of course, we've mentioned the competition guidelines you can download. Frequently asked questions are quite helpful. These are a number of questions headquarters has put together to address many of the same questions that folks have whenever the guidelines change or put out. And certainly since they are new this year, there are a number of those. There are fact sheets with regards to the grant competition and also with regards to coalitions. So if you're a little unsure about, again, the coalition part, there's a fact sheet out there on that. Next slide. These are also important resources to note as web-based. There's the Region 7 Brownfields information online. That's our Region 7 website. And there's two other resources here to highlight. One, of course, and I'd like to highlight first, is the Technical Assistance to Brownfields, or TAB, program that operates out of Kansas State University. It's a resource that is free, and it's provided to regions. It's provided nationally, but this TAB out of K-State provides services to regions 5 and 7 now, and they will for the next 5 years, and it's paid through an EPA grant. So again, this is at no cost to the communities or eligible applicants. They can assist you in many ways and with a lot of questions, and they can answer specifics on proposals, again, that we cannot answer here at EPA. So they're an excellent resource to check into. And out of that, also, some resources exist, such as SMART-E, which is an online sustainable management approaches and revitalization tool. And really, SMART-E is a tool that's out there to assist you with all aspects of your revitalization project. It can really take you from your beginning planning stages to your actual remediation. So it's a wonderful interactive tool to use. TAB-EZ is probably more relevant for the upcoming competition. And TAB-EZ is an online tool that was developed by our Kansas State TAB, again, to assist the user in writing their FY09 assessment and or cleanup grants. There are no RLF templates in there this year. There will be one next year. So if you're coming in for an RLF, it won't assist you with all those elements. But certainly for an assessment or a cleanup grant, whether it's site-specific on the assessment or community-wide, this tool can be quite helpful if you've never written a grant before. So that resource is available. And I will flip the next slide. Would be slide number 24. There we are. And this is just a placeholder. Again, this is where we go into the question and answer phase, and at that point, I am going to turn it over to our RCRA program liaison, Stephanie Doolin, and other folks here, and we'll open it up for a question and answer session.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Stephanie Doolin, and Susan Klein would have been here to help me kind of bounce this back and forth, but she's out sick today, so I'm going to try to do this with help from the rest of our team. we put together a couple of things in this question and answer session. First, we start out with some questions and answers that came from either our own clue-in that we had about a month ago, our own face-to-face workshops here in Region 7 that we had here in Kansas City and one in Omaha, and also we borrowed some of what we thought were the more relevant questions from other clue-in sessions done in the Northeast and Region 4 that we had access to. So we sort of cherry-picked these and came up with the ones that we thought might be the most relevant. So I'll go through just to kind of get us warmed up, and then we'll just do some general question and answer just amongst participants on this call. And then if there aren't too many questions, I've got some follow-on question and answers that we, again, sort of cherry-picked from the FAQs that Brad mentioned that are available online on the headquarters website. So with that, I'm moving on to slide number 25. First question, does a checklist need to be attached and submitted with the proposal? No, the checklist is only for your use, just to make sure that you've submitted everything that's required and you don't get your proposal application bounced back because it missed a threshold criteria. Moving on to slide number 26. Are the letters of support from the community-based organizations included in that 18-page limit? And the answer is no, they don't count towards your 18-page limit. However, that said, you want to provide letters of support judiciously. You want to be sure that they're relevant, that the organization really has involvement in your project, and that you've discussed them within the narrative text of your proposal. On to slide number 27. How many letters of support can or should I have? And the answer to that is there's no maximum or minimum. Just use good judgment and make sure, as Brad said before, that the organizations that you've included in your letters of support are, quote, grassroots organizations or non-governmental. On slide number 28. If you're submitting a community-wide assessment grant proposal for combined hazardous substances and petroleum, are you required to get the petroleum determination letter from the state? And the answer is that you're not required to attach a petroleum determination letter from the state if you're doing community-wide. However, if you have a site-specific petroleum assessment, you need the letter. On slide number 29, can EPA review draft proposals? No, as Brad mentioned before, we cannot. However, we can answer questions about threshold criteria and generally about ranking criteria. We just can't talk about your specific proposal with you. But you can get assistance from any of the state contacts or TAB at K-State.
This is Bob Richards. I'll just add on that. Maybe it's already covered in some other questions. Site eligibility issues, you can refer to us, and those would go to the Brownfields coordinator. Would that be going through Susan?
Yes. Okay. So she can document them.
She can document them, and then...
even though we all know that they go to you.
Okay. Well, that's fine. And then we can, you know, Susan may be able to answer, or she'll bring me on, and we can make a determination for that particular thing. If you have a particular site-specific property that you're going to apply for a grant.
On slide number 30, for the budget, if you're submitting one proposal for hazardous substances and petroleum, and the tasks are the same for both the budgets, is it okay to only include one task description and note that it applies to both budgets? And yes, that is okay. You just want to be clear. Explain things in your narrative. Be sure that you're clear, because that's one of the things that reviewers, you know, if they're confused about your budget and how you're going to spend your money, then it casts your proposal in a bad light, potentially. On slide number 31, the FAQs list salaries as a prohibited cost, but yet the budget examples indicate there's a category for personnel costs that are eligible. What's correct here? Okay, well, personnel costs for implementing the work plan and reporting that's required as a part of the grant are eligible costs. You just want to avoid the use of the word administrative and anything, any administrative-like costs that can't be specifically tied to oversight and reporting on the grant itself. On slide number 32, why is there an equipment line in the budget if equipment's not eligible? Okay, equipment costs can be eligible on a case-by-case basis. However, an equipment item under the law has to be greater than $5,000 in value. So if you really do have a legitimate equipment item, which might be in a cleanup proposal, for example, you want to clarify what it is and why it's necessary to implement the project. And the example that I could come up with would be renting a piece of equipment to accomplish the cleanup. So equipment can be eligible. Just remember, it's always more than $5,000. Otherwise, it's a supply. On slide number 33, does an eligible entity need to also own the property to be eligible for an assessment application? No. Property ownership's not necessary for assessment, only for cleanup. On slide number 34, can a nonprofit be a member of a coalition as long as it is not the applicant, the primary applicant? And the answer is no. All of the applicants that are part of a coalition have to be eligible. On slide number 35, for assessment coalitions, is there a requirement for a 50-50 split between hazardous substances and petroleum? And the answer is no. We just used that on slide 9 as an example. You just want to be sure to apply for the appropriate mix of the funding based on your own project needs and show that in the budget. On slide number 36, does each member of a coalition need to receive the same number of assessments? No, but the members of the coalition need to agree in that memorandum of agreement up front about how you're going to distribute the funds and implement the assessment work. And remember that under a coalition, it's up to $1 million, but you have to address a minimum of 5 sites. On slide number 37, should a community-wide application discuss specific sites, even though we have not yet done the site selection? The answer is that a more competitive proposal is going to indicate some of the sites. Maybe you don't even call them out by address, but you talk about the types of sites that you're going to address and the amounts, if you know, of the contamination, amounts and types, and also anything that you can add about the human health risks or ecological effects associated with these types of contaminants and these types of sites. You want to just show that you know something about your project and what kind of sites you're going to be addressing. It shows your level of sophistication as an applicant. On slide number 38, if you applied for and received a brownfield cleanup grant in 07, is the same site eligible again to get more cleanup money in 08? And the answer is no. There's a statutory limit of $200,000 on cleanup sites under the brownfields law. On slide number 39, are construction and demolition costs covered under the cleanup grant? And the answer is maybe. If demolition is required to clean up the site, then it might be an eligible cost. Capping the site with a parking lot is an example of a construction cost that might be eligible. So it's kind of a site-specific thing. And if you have any questions, talk with your brownfield coordinator or your region.
I would also add that I think on a petroleum assessment, sometimes they may have to yank the tank in order to assess the extent of the petroleum underneath. So If you're looking at that, that would be sort of a demolition cost that can slip under an assessment grant even.
Yeah, that's on a later cleanup slide, by the way, because...
Okay.
That's okay. I was just looking for the number, but... it's on slide number 43.
And Bob makes an excellent point. And if you do that under assessment, you have to make sure the rationale is there for pulling the tank. The tank has to show that there was evidence of a clear release or potential of release that would give you cause to pull that tank, and not a methodology of, well, here's a great way to get rid of tanks.
Good point.
So,
Yeah. And that is in the frequently asked questions that are on the headquarters website. And the website, the web link was provided previously in the resources that Brad went over. On slide number 40, we have the question bird. And it's at this point, what I'd like to do is just kind of turn it over to the participants on the call and see what questions you have. And if for some reason everyone is shy or they don't want to tip their hand on what their project is, then I also loaded up some of the frequently asked questions from the headquarters website that we can refer to periodically to kind of fill while people are thinking up more questions. So at this point, what questions do you all have?
Stephanie?
Yes.
Hey, this is Bridget Ashton with Terracon.
Good morning.
I got two different questions for you. One, last week on the national call, they were sort of indicating that some of the backup support letters really just needed to be from community organizations that you identify in your proposal that are going to invest in the project. And then earlier today, you were saying that we have to have them for all of the community organizations that we mentioned in the grant application. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out how many letters we need.
I think the letters are going to be tricky this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, as I said previously in one of the Q&As that got asked in one of the clue-in sessions from another region, there's no minimum or maximum, but you just want to use good judgment and include as many as are relevant to your project.
Okay.
They really have some role in your project, and you can state what they're going to provide and how you're going to interact with them, then I would include only those.
Okay. And then my other question is for coalition proposals that indicates that we have to address 5 sites with grant funding for coalitions. I'm not necessarily seeing any specific place where we're supposed to talk about these 5 sites, and I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing something.
There's no location, Bridget, where you have to put
okay.
those sites at. It's
okay.
just a requirement that under the assessment agreement that the coalition members will assess a minimum of 5 sites.
Okay.
And again, the purpose of that was just to prevent somebody from coming in for a really large site-specific.
Okay.
So the intent is to have community-wide involvement.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, you don't have to have 5 already picked out or anything like this.
Competitive proposal, though, might discuss some of those sites.
Or you might discuss, communities might discuss their distribution when they're talking about, well, this partner is going to get 7 and this one's going to get 5 and this one's going to get 3 or whatever that is.
Okay. That was it.
Okay. What other questions do you folks have? Nicole, do we have any questions that were submitted online?
We do not, but I encourage anybody that is listening online to go ahead and submit the questions. I am monitoring that.
Okay. Again, while people are thinking of more questions, I'll go to slide number 41. Can I submit my proposal electronically? And the answer is that yes, you may at grants.gov. However, just be aware that the electronic applications have to be received before midnight Eastern Standard Time on November 14th. And You also still have to submit the hard copy to your regional brownfields coordinator, which in Region 7 is Susan Klein, and her name and address is in the all three of the proposal guidelines. And if you submit electronically, we recommend, based on anecdotal experiences we've heard of in the past, that you do it well in advance so that you avoid submitting late. Let's do one more of the FAQs. Let's go to slide number 42. This, again, comes right off the headquarters webpage. Can a petroleum brownfields grant be used for incidental assessment or cleanup of hazardous substances? And the answer is yes, as long as the principal purpose of the assessment or cleanup grant is to assess or clean up the petroleum contaminated site. There are always these questions about, are the contaminants 51% petroleum or what? Somewhat of a judgment call, but you want to be sure that the principal purpose of the assessment or cleanup grant is to deal with petroleum contamination. And sometimes hazardous substances are just incidental to that cleanup. The next slide, 43, was the question that Bob brought up about the petroleum tank removal. And yes, it is possible under certain circumstances to remove a tank as a part of an assessment for petroleum in the instance that you can't perform the assessment without removing the tank. And the grant recipient is accountable for making that decision and documenting the rationale for it. Let's go back to the lines and see if I've allowed people time to come up with other questions. On slide number 44, Water Assessment Coalition, who's eligible to apply and what requirements must a coalition meet? We've talked about a lot of this, but just one more time to be sure everybody's clear on it. An assessment coalition is comprised of three or more eligible entities. You can receive up to $1 million in assessment funding. You have to work on a minimum of 5 sites. Eligible entities may possibly include state, local, and tribal governments, general purpose units of government, land clearance authorities, and other quasi-governmental entities, regional councils of government, economic redevelopment agencies, and states could be part of a coalition. And as Brad said, the coalition members just need to post-selection need to develop a memorandum of understanding amongst each other for how this all works amongst the entities, who gets the assessments, and how site selection is conducted, and implementation of the cooperative agreement.
And in the proposal, they have to identify who the principal is.
Yes.
Of that coalition up front, so that's something that can be worked out. As far as the equity between the three can be worked out after the selection, but in the proposal, the principal must be clearly identified.
On slide number 45, do you have to own the site when you apply for the cleanup grant? No, you don't have to own it at the time you apply, but as we stated before, you have to own the property by fee simple title by June 30th, 2009, in order to get the grant funding. Otherwise, the funding goes back into the pot and gets awarded to the next group down the line in the ranking of the proposal.
Hi, Stephanie. It's Nicole. We had a question submitted online about coalitions.
Yes.
It says, what types of agreements among coalition entities are required to submit an application?
Can you take that, Bob?
I'm going to just sort of refer to the frequently asked questions, and I believe that in that there was basically a reference to a memorandum agreement, and that's what we're looking for in the application. Looks like that is question number 48 in the frequently asked questions session. So I'm going to flip to that and see if I'm... and the question is, what does the Assessment Coalition Memorandum of Agreement contain? How do I obtain a copy of the sample MOA? It's a simple two-page agreement that they sign prior to the expenditure of any awarded assessment funds. So that's what we're looking at. A memorandum of agreement has to be in place prior to the expenditure of funds. Is this the exact question that we're looking at, or are we looking at something prior to submission for the grant? Because this is like prior to award.
Great. Yeah, and the guidelines themselves, the response, the guidelines provided to coalition assessments provided on page 4 and 5 of the assessment booklet. And Bob's correct. With regards to the proposal itself, you simply have to identify who your primary member is and who the coalition members are, and note that those coalition members cannot have the same jurisdiction. For example, they can't be different departments in the same county. Unless they're somehow a separate legal entity, for example, a city or a relevant agency, redevelopment agency. And then you have to identify which of those entities is going to be the principal or the one that's responsible to assign for the grant. The MOA comes into play after the coalition is ranked successfully and selected for award. You can have the MOA already developed. That's fine, too. And I think even gives more credit to your proposal, but certainly it has to be developed before the award is made, and that's going to document things like your site selection processes, your expenditure of funds, and so forth within your coalition, and how you distribute the task and the activities. So that's very important.
And I think that you're going to be looking at the cover letter with the application too, to identify the parties and make sure that you've demonstrated to the people who are reviewing this that everybody actually is, or that entity A, B, and C are all on board.
Hopefully we answered that question.
Oh, on question number 48, it does give the reference on where the MOA agreement is.
More questions? This is your chance before you submit your proposal to ask anything and everything you ever wanted to know. On slide 46, if an applicant submits 3 cleanup proposals, will they be reviewed by the same panel? And the answer is yes. The same national mini panel will review your applications, and you'll get reviews from the same 3 reviewers. This also will be the same for assessment when you have a community-wide hazardous substances and a petroleum proposal from the same applicants. They'll all be assigned to the same mini panel. That way the reviewers know and understand your project better and can better score your proposal. On slide 47, my last question, what form does the phase 2 take for a site most likely contaminated with asbestos? And you could also apply this same concept to mining sites or methamphetamine labs and so on. And there's no specific requirement for what a phase 2 has to look like, but EPA's looking to see that you have a basic understanding of what contaminants you have at your site and what needs to get cleaned up. Most phase 2 assessments conform to the ASTM standard, but other types of contaminants like asbestos, lead-based paint, mine waste, and so on may follow a form or answer different questions about nature and extent that follows other state or federal regulatory programs. Do you have any more questions? That's the last one I had, so I'm going to just be quiet for 30 seconds or so and see if anything else comes up.
And we can do it like the auction house, going once, going twice.
Fair warning.
Fair enough. We want to thank everybody for taking your time to participate in today's call.
Thank you all. I really like these clue-in sessions because I think they're a quick and cheap way to get the information out, spread the word, and when we do these for next year's competition, let's be sure and have lots of people participate, and we'll keep on doing these. There's no travel money expended. We lessen our carbon footprint and use as little of people's time as possible. So we'd like to continue to do these, and we thank you for your participation. Nicole, any final things from the internet?
We had no other questions, but just a reminder to everybody to fill out the evaluation form online, and as already stated, the Brownfield proposals are due November 14th.